everyone, welcome to The Great American Bash. My name is Brandon Weatherby. The Great American Bash is a podcast about the intersections of presidential politics and professional wrestling. Co-host and co-author Chris Kelly and I are experts in the field, considering that we're the authors of the book, The Donald, How Trump Turned Presidential Politics into Pro Wrestling. You could find that and pieces that we've written for places like The Washington Post and Slate, Vice, U.S. News and World Reports, and more at presidentwrestler.com. To listen to the newest episode of The Great American Bash, follow us on Facebook. It's facebook.com/GabPod, G-A-B-P-O-D. This episode was originally recorded September 23rd, 2016. Without further ado, here's episode 13 of The Great American Bash.
You smell what Barack has cooked.
I'm here to challenge you to a match.
When it comes to standing up for the American people, I am ready to rumble.
I think that we may need a wrestler in the White House.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Great American Bash. My name is Brandon Weatherby.
My name is Chris Kelly.
We are recording in Washington, D.C., home of the Trump Hotel.
You get swerved.
Yeah, and we'll get into that later. But first, a shameless plug for our book.
We got a book! It's endorsed by Donald Trump. How long is it until we get sued by Donald Trump?
Let's hope that that doesn't happen.
Ah, whatever. It'll be good for... best for business.
Good publicity. Yeah, it's called The Donald, How Trump Turned Presidential Politics into Pro Wrestling. It's available now on Amazon. You could also go to DonaldTrumpAsAWrestler.com, find more about it.
We got DonaldTrumpAsAWrestler.com. We didn't have to buy it from someone. Yeah. That was just available, sheeple. Wake up.
Yeah.
That's our next president.
And the book will tell you all about how that's going to happen or not happen. Or what the hell has happened.
We are soothsayers.
Yes, what is the hell has happened and kind of what we do here in book form.
Yeah, it's in pod form. It's way too many sources for the amount of pages.
Yeah.
It's a cheap audiobook, not audiobook, sorry, it's a cheap ebook purchase, and we will be updating it after the campaign as well. So if you buy it now, you'll get the super-duper long deluxe edition with many WrestleMania 23 references that don't need to exist. But yeah, we've been working on this for about a year. And now it exists in some sort of form. I don't know how books on the internet exist in form, but whatever, we're going with that. Meredith Ketchel to the art. Wrestling fans will understand the reference. And other people, it doesn't really matter. It's still Trump holding a gigantic flag, and the symbolism is not lost on us.
Yes, and you can get it for $9.99, the price of 1 month of the award-winning WWE Network. So it's a pretty good deal, I think.
So would you rather read thousands upon thousands of words about wrestling or watch Clash of Champions? I mean, both of them are going to take about the same amount of time. Ours is more enjoyable, and we could promise that. Will it be as good as Backlash? I don't know. Backlash was pretty okay.
It was pretty okay.
All right, let's go back to the Washington, D.C. Home of the Trump Hotel! I don't know if you knew this, but this weekend... We need to timestamp that. It is currently Friday...
September 23rd.
September 23rd. Tomorrow is the opening of the Smithsonian African American History Museum.
Yes.
And it's a huge deal. And what makes it even more powerful is last week, Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump finally put to rest the birther controversy. So, sure, the museum is going to be great, but is it going to include the greatest part of President Obama's presidency? Are they going to document last weekend's truth-telling that Donald Trump did? I don't know. All I'm saying is the African American Museum might be racist if it doesn't include Donald Trump as an African American hero and ally.
That's good. That's a good JK you did there. yeah, I mean, this happened on Friday. Basically, the Just the Facts version is that Trump teased that he was going to finally comment on the birther controversy, which he started bringing up again. And then it turned into surprising the press that shouldn't be a surprise, not surprising us. It was a big swerve where it turned into an infomercial for the Trump Hotel. He had some veterans up there, and he said two sentences. He said like one sentence about the birtherism stuff, and it had two lies in it. He said that Hillary... he couldn't even get through the one sentence.
Hillary Clinton and her campaign of 2008 started the birther controversy. I finished it. You know what I mean. President Barack Obama was born in the United States, period. Now We all want to get back to making America strong and great again. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you, everybody. Thank you.
You get swerved.
I didn't even notice
that. He said
that.
Hillary Clinton started it, and I finished it, both of which are false.
Oh, my God. He's so great. I love him so much.
And, you know, I mean, obviously, this is just more great heel work, but I was trying to think of times where people have, like, I'm sure there's better examples, but I was just trying to think of times when people teased an announcement going one way and then went the other way. And so one that's recent was when Vince said...
I'm sorry. I can't... I didn't even notice it was two lines in one sentence.
Yeah.
That's really difficult.
It's a tough needle to thread, but he did it. And earlier this year...
Can I just say something? He's clearly got the best words. He's clearly got the best words.
Also a quote, but yeah.
God damn it. Sorry. Okay, I'm sorry.
No problem. Vince McMahon. He said that he was going to have the Vincent J. McMahon Legacy of Excellence Award. It was going to be given to the person that really deserves it. And then he gave it to Stephanie McMahon, who's a big heel, and people were kind of swerved. But there's an even better one when, and I don't know what year it was, but Mark Henry, World's Strongest Man, been in the business for a long time, comes out in a nice salmon suit and talks about basically how he's going to retire.
Mm-hmm.
And then turns out it was a swerve. He's not retiring, and he slammed John Cena, and it was great. And then Sasha Banks just kind of teased that. Not as effective. I just did notice that you have your Sasha Banks mug.
Yeah. Thank you, friend of the Not Show, because he doesn't listen to a podcast, Stephanie Haas.
Okay. So, yeah, it was a big, as always, big week for Trump. A lot more reporting being done on the Trump Foundation, which we've talked about a little bit here. And it turns out he's not just doing this kind of self-dealing and using other people's money to do his charity, but he's also using the charity money to pay his legal fees. Also turns out that when he said it's rigged, he was talking about a charity golf game that he rigged. Like, this is the most carny thing where it's almost like you would expect the holes to be too small for the balls to fit into them.
Oh.
But what he did was a guy did a hole-in-one. He's supposed to win $1 million, but in the legalese said it had to be 150 yards away, and they had purposely made the hole only like 147 yards long, so he didn't get the money and he settled, which is amazing. And the Trump Foundation, this is all being made possible by Vincent and Linda McMahon, who gave $5 million from 2007 to 2009, right after the Battle of the Billionaires, almost like an illegal payment or something, some sort, which is $5 million more dollars than Trump had given in that same period, because he gave zero.
Okay, so this is amazing. Clearly, whenever I think of contests and rigged things, we go back to Million Dollar Man dribbling the basketball.
Yes.
So the Million Dollar... So this is a snake eating his tail. The Million Dollar Man told a young boy, dribble a basketball 15 times and I'll give you the money. He kicks it away at 14. That made the Million Dollar Man money. That made Vince McMahon money. That money went to Donald Trump.
Yeah.
He's the billion... This is so great. I love it. If you... Okay. I just want to make this very clear. I did like mainstream radio this week. And I said, Donald Trump is great, and he's brilliant, and he's my boy, and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I want people to realize, if you don't laugh at this, you'll be very upset. And
that's
I like
the
to
only
have
way to get through it.
I like to, and like the Donald Trump campaign, we like to have fun.
We have fun here. We have fun here.
Sorry.
You're having a lot of fun.
Part of you wish, like, all right, he's president, he wins, it's going to be great. And then, like, the great quotes of history, like, that are, like, you enter a museum, you enter a gorgeous building, and there's, like, quotes from important people. Like, the Tribune Tower has this, right? What are Trump's quotes going to be? We have fun. I settled birtherism. Like, what are the...
You got to treat him like shit.
This
you know?
Is so fun. Okay, sorry. We don't even need to break wrestling like analogs anymore. Like, they're literally the CEO and former CEO of the WWE are in this.
They're in this together. I do want to use this opportunity to bring up a great Attitude Era memory as I continue my never-ending, it seems like, rewatching of the Attitude Era, the era of my childhood. In the June 8th, 1998 episode, McMahon opens the show, and they had teased this a week prior, doing the thing they do now, where McMahon was a heel, but then they showed, like, here's all the nice charity that WWE does in the same show. So the next week, he comes out in black tie with the Stooges, and says he's going to be named the Humanitarian of the Year. And there's a show later in the shows, it'll be a black tie event. And even though he's feuding with him, Stone Cold Steve Austin will be there at this black tie event. So they show these later in the show. They have a couple guys there from these two real life foundations. This was a work, but it was the Hallis Payton Foundation, which is
George Hallis is the original owner of the Chicago Bears and one of the founders of the NFL.
And Walter Payton.
Clearly the greatest running back of all time.
And the Minority Athletes Networking, which doesn't sound like a thing, but I think it is. Then they had the Giant Super Bowl champ, George Martin. And he said, you know, the amount that you've given, it seems to be less than you said you were going to do, but the check cleared on the second time. And then the Bears running back, Darnell Autry, goes, I don't remember McMahon giving a check, but I guess we're here anyway. So Austin, who is wearing his black vest, no shirt, jean shorts look, and a black tie, just a black tie. It's a good look. He takes out $1,200 in cash and gives it on McMahon's behalf and says, you should be the jackass of the year. And then it ends because it's 1998. The Undertaker's music hits. Kane and Mankind jump Stone Cold, and they put him in a casket. And that was the end of the Humanitarian of the Year segment.
No follow-up?
That was it, yeah. That was the whole story of the show was just to get Stone Cold in the ring and have him get jumped and put in a casket. Yeah.
Not long after. I think Walter Payton either had just died or was about to die. I saw Walter Payton in the stands at my freshman year high school's homecoming game. His son was on the other team, and that was the fall of 97, mm-hmm. and he passed away soon after.
He passed away November 1st, 1999. His son went on to play at the University of Miami.
There you go.
I was there.
So was Walter Payton there, by any chance? Do you know?
They didn't show him there.
Okay, just wondering.
Just making sure.
Just wanted to see if we could tie a dead man to a casket match, if possible.
You got to send Osama bin Laden to the Undertaker.
That's a John McClane. John McCain quote. I'm having too much fun. Just so you guys know, this is on the record. 10 years after this, in 2008, all three presidential candidates at the time, Barack Hussein Obama, Hillel Clinton, that was the name she gave herself, and John McCain wanted to send Undertaker to Osama bin Laden to teach bin Laden a lesson. So I just want everyone to know that was the GOP platform in 2008. Let the Undertaker handle all terrorism. Not much has changed. Mark Calloway is a strong man. He's getting older, but that's okay. He could probably still handle all terrorism.
There you go.
That's the stance of this podcast.
That's the official stance of the Great American Bash. I was checking in Walter Payton's other WWE connections. Apparently he did an angle in 1994 with Razor Ramon.
Bear sweetness, Walter Payton.
Tick tock, tick tock, yo diso. Time is ticking away for you, chico. SummerSlam. It's just a little over 1 week away. A short time until the bad guy becomes the two-time Intercontinental Champion. Yeah, right, sweetness?
That's right. Shawn Michaels, you've been doing a lot of talk, and talk's cheap. I can back my words up. My words are, if you try anything, there will be a vacancy sign hanging in your heartbreak hotel.
The Bears There's have a weird storied this, history of WrestleMania. Yeah. It's in WrestleMania 2, the worst WrestleMania of all time.
Yes.
The one that was in three locations. The second location was actually in at Rosemont, at the Rosemont Horizon, but it was referred to as Chicago the 100% of the time, even though it was in Rosemont. You know how you know it's in Rosemont? It's called the Rosemont Horizon. Anyways, this was right after the Chicago Bears won the Super Bowl,
yeah.
And there was a 20-man battle royale,
yep.
Half athletes, half wrestlers, and three of them were Chicago Bears players.
It's bizarre.
This is a horrible idea.
It's just a bad idea all around. But yeah, there is a promo that Walter Payton cut with Raymond Razor Ramon that we'll include here.
And sorry, one last thing. I can't believe I forgot this. The biggest wrestler / Chicago Bear of all time, Stephen Michael.
Yes.
An actual part of the WCW for a while.
Yeah, so. An actual wrestler. So while Trump was dealing with the foundation in the hotel, our new favorite heel, Donald Trump Jr., keeps stepping in it, keeps, quote-unquote, making these gaffes. This week, he said, you know, if he posted a picture, a meme of Skittles, and, you know, if I showed you Skittles and three of them would kill you, would you eat the Skittles? And saying that Syrian refugees are Skittles. Skittles declined to comment and said that Skittles are candy and not people. But, yeah, this is the thing is, like, Trump Jr. keeps doing these, like, last week we talked about his deplorables, expendables meme. There was a thing months ago where he talked with a right-wing radio guy, an alt-right guy, and they've all been shown as gaffes or described as gaffes in the press, but it really starting to look like it's on purpose. He's doing outreach to the alt-right. He has plausible deniability from the campaign because it's like, oh, no, Donald Trump didn't say that. Donald Trump Jr. said it. And they have the same name. So, you know, it's good plausible deniability on their
all
part.
I'm saying is McMahon bought Nitro. Which McMahon? I don't know.
Yeah, a McMahon bought Nitro.
For the non-wrestling fan, I don't know why you're listening to this, but for the non-wrestling fan, Vince McMahon in real life bought the WCW for a pretty not hefty sum, a few million dollars.
Yeah.
He owns the library now. It's part of the network. God damn it. Sorry. Just the amount of content you would have to pay now for all of that is absurd. Yeah. But in kayfabe, his son bought WCW and showed up on that show, and that was that. Anyways, back to Trump and TJ here. It's brilliant. I love it. And Skittles, you're boring. You bored me. You could have sent something fun, but you treated people like people. What's up with that? You're supposed to be a heartless corporation that gives diabetes to people. Stop being nice.
Well, they're plenty nice. And you know who really loves Skittles other than Donald Trump Jr.? Good old JR.
I love these. Paul Fruity. Delicious. Delicious. Fruity. Fruity. Mother Fruity.
Yeah, I was wondering how much of that clip we're going to put in.
How have we not tracked every single product that the Trumps have advocated for that have also sponsored Monday Night Raw, SmackDown, and WWE pay-per-views?
It's exhaustive research. I don't have interns. You have interns. And you have my network password, so get to work,
so
interns.
So we have clearly KFC and Skittles. There's somebody's going to do the do next.
You got to find. I think it's easier to find the stuff that Trump did and then just cross-reference it. So that's for another day. For tomorrow, there will be the rematch of Brock Lesnar and Randy Orton at a house show at the aforementioned Allstate FKA Rosemont Arena.
Mm-hmm.
This is the rematch after the real-life elbowing into the head of Randy Orton that gave him like 20 stitches and a concussion that they tried to downplay because somehow doing a real concussion is not as bad as doing fake bleeding in their logic. So
not fake blading, though. This was not fake blading.
No, this was Brock Lesnar's bony elbows that opened Randy Orton's skull. Wasn't sure this match was going to happen because, you know, he had the concussion. He wasn't medically cleared. He was doing the house show I saw. He didn't take any bumps. He just did his three moves. But it looks like there will be some sort of match tomorrow, which will be interesting.
This is interesting for a few reasons. I was definitely interested in UFC 200 only for Brock Lesnar. Brock Lesnar comes out and essentially says, hey, everybody, let's get along. And that was weird because Brock Lesnar usually does not have a social justice message.
No.
Because he's just a white boy from Minnesota.
He's jacked, yeah.
It's crazy. And now, Paul Heyman, he's Brock Lesnar's advocate in kayfabe and is essentially his spokesman in real life. He's able to say some pretty wacky things every now and then. But Randy Orton is actually the one that's coming out in ways that maybe he shouldn't.
Yeah, so Dave Zirin, a friend of your other show, tweeted that, you know, regarding the Colin Kaepernick situation, if you're sneering that it doesn't take courage to raise your fist during the anthem, then you're one of the reasons why it takes courage. And Randy Orton on his Twitter retweeted this and said, sneering, more like shaking my head. Courage? LOL, right, courage. That's what it takes to stand up and fight, not raise a fist. Which I thought was interesting coming from a guy who was discharged from the Marine Corps for bad conduct after he went AWOL twice and then spent 38 days in a military prison. And then went on to play... No, he didn't play the Marine, but that would be... Wait, was he in one of the Marine movies, though?
I'm sure he was.
I thought they wouldn't... I'll look that up. But what do you think of Randy Orton's anti-social
justice?
Here's
what I want to know about the Zirin-Lesnar thing. The Zirin-Orton thing. This was just over Twitter, right?
Yes.
Why is Randy Orton following Dave Zirin on Twitter?
He must have seen it, and then I'm guessing...
Because Dave is he's a very vocal social justice warrior.
Yes.
All of his books about sports are pretty much saying, like, hey, this is wrong. Like,
don't do this.
College players should be paid. Remember those guys in 68 at the Olympics? They were right. Stuff like that.
Yeah.
Why? Two things. Why Randy Orton should not be on Twitter. He is maybe the dumbest looking wrestler of all time, in mm-hmm. my humble opinion.
That's nice.
He is. He just looks like an idiot. And based on everything he says and does, makes me think he's an idiot. Right. Not like sending your dick pics to people and saying, you will please me sexually, idiot, like Seth Rollins.
Right.
Not like I'm a closeted racist, but almost I have a lot of money now because I deal with a weird tech billionaire, Hulk Hogan. But just is a stereotype of a dummy. Anyways, that's just me being mean to people from Missouri for no particular reason. Randy Orton does not have the best track record in the WWE in the last 12 months. He's been hurt a long time. His one big fight back kind of was underwhelming and sad. Yeah. There's really no place for him. He's kind of aging out of this. Why is he weighing in on this?
Right. Well, I don't know. Zirin, the tweet only had like 375 retweets, but somehow he came across it, and that's we get Randy Orton dabbling in politics. So that's one clash that was saved for Twitter, and there will be that clash at the Allstate or the Rosemont. This weekend is also Clash of Champions.
Not the Clash of the Champions.
Which was the WCW's pay-per-view for a long time. Night of Champions, which was WWE's up until last year.
This is the only pay-per-view's name that was kept from the WCW era. Just a little fun note there.
It's the only one that they're using currently. Yeah.
I am both very interested in this and not at all interested in this in the exact same time. This is the first Raw-only pay-per-view since the brand split.
Yes.
The timing could not have been better. Sure, you're going against football, whatever. There's football all the time. But it's the night before the first presidential debate. There's never been a more apt time to use that overused analogy of wrestling as politics. And to start the show, we have, in the pre-card, we have a women's match.
Yes, and this is going to be Alicia Fox versus Nia Jax. Alicia Fox has been in the company for about 10 years. She's, really athletic, but was, part of that Divas division. Didn't really do much for a long time. Nia Jax is a bigger woman. She's like 6 foot, 200 something pounds. They're having her as the big monster who's going to demolish all these girls. She's already like speared Alicia through the barricade, and hopefully she squashes Alicia on
and she
on
will
Sunday. Yeah.
Somewhat storyline stuff. Most people know Alicia because she's on Total Divas, mm-hmm. and most people know Nia because she is one of The Rock's cousins.
Yes.
So he'll occasionally share Instagrams with her, and if you are the biggest grossing movie star in the world and you have the most Instagram followers, that actually means something. So you know her from that.
Right. And then I'm going to go basically the card backwards, but no idea what order this will be in. But we have our first in some time cruiserweight title match on a WWE pay-per-view with our new cruiserweight champion, TJ Perkins, versus Brian Kendrick. An old vet who's the perfect heel for this first thing. Real weird this week. TJ Perkins won the title last Wednesday on the network exclusive CWC Cruiserweight Championship tournament, and then wasn't shown on Raw. They had a really good match to determine number one contender, but it's really weird to have a number one contender for a belt and a person that no one's ever seen before.
No, it was shown on Raw.
He wasn't.
Oh, he wasn't shown on Raw.
They had
yes,
Mick
that's
Foley.
Correct.
Who has had how many concussions? Too many concussions. Cut a 7-minute promo. He's just like, he's drowning and they're throwing him an anchor. It's very tough to watch.
Yeah.
But they had a good match. So that'll be fun. Perkins is going to go over and it should be a cool match that's going to get This Is Awesome chance because people don't usually see this stuff in WWE. We've also got Cesaro and Sheamus finishing up their best of seven series that Cesaro will have to win or else this whole thing's been a waste.
Whatever.
They've been telling a good story there. It's been...
No, it's
not
bad.
And they've had good matches before, not just the series, but, I mean, it's two big guys who are more athletic than they
I think the political analogy for this would be just like you're two state reps and you're okay with both and you don't really care. And they're like, I understand both points of view. This is a midterm election. Someone's going to win. Okay.
Yep. There you go. In the one that has the most, American and political analogies would be for the U.S. title. Currently held by Rusev versus Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns, as we've said, can be also seen as the Hillary Clinton of the WWE, the face that's not as bad as people make it out to be. It seems like he's going to win this, but I really hope
I don't care who wins this because I'm interested to see how they use this product with either men. This is for the U.S. Championship mm-hmm. a month before the election. So whoever has this is probably going to have it through the election. So if Roman Reigns has it, we're going to hear zero political-inspired promos. And if Rusev has it, there's a chance he goes off script and says some stuff that maybe rankle, like, rankles? Is that a word? That makes a few people backstage angry. He could bring in Trump on this. He came out initially as like a Russian guy. He's from Bulgaria. It doesn't matter. His first major run, that year at SummerSlam, there were Putin posters throughout the crowd.
Yeah.
That's what I want to know. Do they take this belt off of him for political reasons? Not like backstage political reasons, yeah, but accurate. Presidential political reasons. I don't think they're thinking that far ahead,
yeah.
But from my perspective, that's all I'm thinking about.
Clearly. Also, we have not for a championship, but we have the two, we have the ex-friend and the current best friend of Kevin Owens in a match, Sami Zayn and Chris Jericho. That should be a real fun one. Chris Jericho is doing some of the best work of his career. Do you have anything on that one?
That's going to be great because isn't Sami Zayn El Generico?
Yeah.
So this
is... Well, they had similar movesets, and Generico hasn't been seen in a long time.
Yeah, exactly. So aren't they kind of setting this up for maybe a big thing at Survivor Series or something?
Like what?
Like they bring back El Generico?
I don't think they're going to bring back.
I'm just throwing that out there.
I mean, I think this will be towards which we'll see the main event. I think it's going to have repercussions there. We also have a triple threat between Women's Champion Charlotte and Sasha and Bayley. Could be potentially match of the night just because when they've done multi-person matches...
I would agree with you except the last match. Sami Zayn and Jericho are very, very, very good.
Yeah.
And we've already seen this.
Yeah.
And I love seeing this. This is great. But we all know that women can't wrestle, so it's going to be disappointing. JK.
Yes.
I don't care who wins this, but it's the same reason I don't care who wins Reigns Rusev. I'm happy with any outcome.
Yeah. No, I'm more from this the storyline, it has to be Charlotte, and kind of have to have those seeds of dissent with Sasha and Bayley because they could have some great matches. And it's crazy because it's like they have the really, this is the this whole pay-per-view, they have the strong roster, but like the women, it's really just this one story that they're telling. There's the Nia Jax one, which is a small story, but I think people are going to get burned out seeing these three wrestle each other every week. Speaking of burnout, we have the New Day versus the Club, Luke Gallows and Karl Anderson for the tag belts. Big E is back from his bout with ring post-itis, where they did a month of dick jokes. Then they tried to do some old fart jokes, and they didn't go over well. This feud needs to fucking end, but it did have a great moment 2 Mondays ago when basically every tag team on the roster was brawling in the ring, and Xavier Woods, who usually is the manager role, he plays the trombone, he got up on the turnbuckle, took out his cell phone, live on Monday Night Raw, and started recording it, and tweeting it and screaming world star over and over again, which was the funniest thing they've done in a little while with these guys.
Every time I want to count them out or I'm tired of them, there's one thing that pulls me back in.
Yeah, it's always they always manage to get something. I think they're going to keep them just because they keep talking about Demolition's reign, and if they keep it for a few more months, they'll actually be the longest reigning WWE tag team champions.
I think that you're right, and if you know Stephanie McMahon and you know anything about how she feels about charity, and it's currently September, which means it's Connor's Cures Month. Connor the Crusher was a young boy that died way too young, because that's what happens when you're a boy and you die, you're too young.
Nice.
Cancer, he died of cancer. So every Raw, SmackDown, pay-per-view, they mention this, and there's a video package about this. So it's usually wrestlers going to hospitals and essentially granting make-a-wishes. It's adorable. It's lovely. The NBA does it too with NBA Cares. It's the best part of any sporting event. So who are they bringing out right now? The New Day and Sasha Banks. They're the most popular. So it's hard to imagine that they take the belts or make these guys the bad guys if they're doing the Stephanie McMahon advocated charity work, because what did Stephanie say in Biz? Was it Biz 3?
No, it's the it's when she quoted Biz Stone, who said,
Biz Stone, thank you,
the Twitter guy, who said
philanthropy is the
way that brands are going to win.
There you go.
And
so
that's the lesson from Stephanie.
That's it, and that you should definitely pay attention to that when it comes to fantasy booking. All of this,
yes. And then for our headlining match for the Universal Title, Kevin Owens versus Seth Rollins, should be a great match. These two guys haven't worked as I don't think they've worked as much because KO's like whole rise was while Rollins was hurt.
You're wrong. They've been working on the house show circuit forever.
Stuff that people have seen.
Oh, stuff that people have seen.
Yeah.
No, they haven't done that much together.
Yeah.
It's going to be great.
Yeah, it should be a good one. And hopefully Jericho somehow gets involved and, you know, we'll see what happens there, because getting Jericho involved in this feud and with his best friend Kevin Owens, which will be
we're living in the best time ever. We're gonna have Donald Trump in the office. We have a Canadian with the Universal Championship. It's the best.
Yes. So that's on Sunday. The other Clash of Champions is on Monday. The first debate, like we were talking about, in the front row will be Mark Cuban.
Yeah, I sent this article to you today.
Yeah.
I thought this was a joke.
Yeah.
And then I clicked through. This is from The Hill.
Yeah.
This is a real publication, and they teased it out like Mark Cuban might be in the front row. In the article, it says he's confirmed it, and he's currently taunting Trump on Twitter.
Yeah.
Did you see that?
Yeah, he's calling it the humbling at Hofstra.
It's amazing.
It's no Rumble in the Jungle, but it's pretty fucking good. So, yes, they're using you know, boxing or wrestling taglines now to describe this debate. There's also a piece today. We had some stuff a couple weeks ago about how they were both preparing, and how Trump's former advisor said he wanted to be WrestleMania, and how Hillary was doing all this research and trying to find people to play Trump. Today's New York Times is a report about Trump's debate.
There's a lot of gems in here, so you can't read the entire article.
Yeah, I'm just going to read the ones that that Jonathan Chait of New York Mag pulled out, because he in his intro said that one is that Trump's advisors are deliberately setting expectations at rock bottom, which would be The Rock's finishing move or setup signature move, which I liked. I like when these things keep bleeding over accidentally. But so the thing is called online. It's debate prep. Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump differ on that too, by Patrick Healy, Amy Chozick, and Maggie Haberman. I'm just going to, you know, we got a few of these. The fact that he's refused to use lecterns in mock debate sessions, prefers not to do a full length mock debate, has no set person playing Mrs. Clinton. Some Trump advisors are concerned that he underestimates the difficulty of standing still, talking pointedly, and listening sharply for 90 minutes. He prefers spitballing ideas with his team rather than honing them into crisp 2-minute answers. He believed debates are not won or lost on policy minutiae, since most viewers will not remember them in an hour. They see it as a waste of trying to fill his head with facts and figures, which is
true.
You
could just stop talking right now. To sum it up, he don't give a fuck. That's it.
Yes. So, but the political gamesmanship of them leaking this stuff is now putting the
God, it's so great.
This
it's
is what
so
they
great.
Did with GW. Is like, let's lower the expectations that if he doesn't take his dick out or call the C word, Trump wins. Trump wins. By God, he's killed her. Trump wins. You know,
he okay. Laugh all you want, Donald Trump. His team is fucking brilliant.
Yeah.
With the way his son is catering to white supremacists is brilliant. I know that sounds wrong.
It's horrible.
It is wrong.
Yes.
Who gives a shit? Start thinking like Bobby the Brain Heaton, and stop thinking like a rational
human
being.
Stop using your brain. Yeah.
Ooh, that's fun.
Yeah, tighten that up, yeah.
That should be on a pro wrestling t-shirt. It's Kellyanne Conway. We were talking about this before the show. There's really no way to talk about her this week. It doesn't really fit in any narrative. But the work rate that she has is second to none. She is the Kevin Owens of this campaign.
Yeah.
She is perfect. Every single thing she says means nothing and everything at the exact same time. Did you watch the warning shows on Sunday?
No, I never do.
I watched Face the Nation and I watched Meet the Press. She was on both. She was asked both times about birtherism and about how her guy, Trump, Donald Trump is her guy, changed his mind. And both times she had the same answer. You'll have to ask him. She's the fucking advocate. That's like Brock Lesnar going, that's like Paul Heyman going, Brock Lesnar's going to maybe defeat the guy. You'll have to ask Brock Lesnar. That's not how this works.
You're the spokesperson. You're speaking for the person. It's right there in the word.
That's fucking brilliant. I love it.
Yeah, but this is definitely, I mean, this is the type of stuff that I think you'll see online, like, liberals kind of get cocky about, like, oh, look at the bad work he's doing, and then they're going to be real shocked on Tuesday when, because Trump is going to, you know, do the performance, probably not get called on his lies as much as he should, because it's just impossible, and you can't argue with, like, it's very tough to argue with a liar, you know, like, he'll just be like, oh, we'll see, or I don't think I said that, and you can't go back and forth, well, I have it right here, and he goes, well, I didn't see the paper, I don't know. So it's very tough for them to win in that.
We need to do two or three more things. Number one, we don't need to talk about this. This isn't a wrestling analog, but it does kind of sort of relate to the debates, which was Hillary Clinton on Between Two Ferns this week.
Yes.
That was essentially the I guess not warning, but sort of announcement, like, Hillary gets the joke.
Yes.
This is maybe how she's going to act in the debates. This is sort of maybe going to parody a future debate. and she came off really, really well.
Yes.
I think that this is a much more subtle thing than your campaign going in the New York Times going like, this guy can't stand still for a fucking minute.
Yeah.
It's not that different, though.
It's it's a different way of setting expectations or showing. Here's how she gets it. She can be funny and personable and the stuff that people call her out on.
But she also understands that, like, Zach Galifianakis going, maybe he should wear a white power tie. And she goes, maybe that's actually better. Like, that's pretty good.
What's the best way to reach you on email? Like, that stuff's great.
That's pretty good.
And the fact that she, you know, played along is awesome.
So before we end with the Atlantic piece,
yes,
we need to do two more things. For a long time, people were thinking maybe there's going to be three people or maybe even four people in this debate.
Yeah. If they hit that 15% threshold,
that's not going to happen.
Right.
Gary Johnson said something.
Should we take the long-term view when it comes to global warming? I think that we should. And the long-term view is that in billions of years, the sun is going to actually grow and encompass the earth, right? So global warming is in our future.
Yeah.
So that's not a serious man at all.
No.
And then today, friend in real life, but probably not friend of the show because he's very important and is not listening to you Wrestling and Politics podcast, even though he should, Ben Terrace of the Washington Post. He's a fantastic reporter. Even if you don't care about politics, you might know him because he's the guy that brought down the Illinois congressman that had a Downton Abbey themed office.
Yes.
So his name is Aaron Schock. He's no longer with us. He's alive, but no longer with us in Washington, D.C., home of the Trump Hotel.
Yeah.
So this is what happened today.
So this is just on Twitter.
Exactly.
Ben Terrace, he said, I asked Jill Stein's press person what the candidate would be doing during the debate and got this cryptic answer. Hi, Ben. Still trying to figure out schedule. For the actual time of the debate, I think she will be in a private space physically, but her presence will be widely felt. That's all I can say for now. Thanks. Winky emoji.
So
I try to do that as like moonbeam as I could because it's a ridiculous thing for someone to say.
So that's why there's not going to be four people on the debate stage.
Yeah.
Because of shit like that.
Sorry, Daniel Bryan, Jill Stein fan, and sorry, Dolph Ziggler, probably Gary Johnson fan. So yeah, the thing in the Atlantic.
So what we're saying is we're straight up Miz fans.
Yeah. Come on, man. It's the Miz. He's a good worker. He's day in, day out. So there's an excellent piece, the cover story in this month's Atlantic by James Fallows, really breaking down the debate, not from policy, just from like the tactics. He interviews Jane Goodall about like how apes show dominance. Like it really, it's an exhaustive look at this debate from every angle. And at one point he gets into, and I'm just going to quote some of these parts here. On his Talking Points memo site earlier this year, political writer Josh Marshall argued that Trump's debate and campaign approach was best understood as embodying what he called the bitch slap theory of politics. As we've covered probably on this, the billionaire bitch slap was a thing that's come up repeatedly. It was in the Battle of the Billionaires, came up on
The
Colbert.
Late Show with Stephen Colbert, featuring Mark Cuban.
Yeah, front row seat, Mark Cuban.
Slash guy that slammed Sheamus through a table or got slammed through tables by Sheamus.
Yeah.
That's it.
Okay. Marshall says he now avoids that term, which is drawn from, among other places, the world of professional wrestling. But its very crudity underscores its meaning, which is that the essential purpose of any encounter is not to solve problems or advance an agenda or anything else C-SPAN worthy. Instead, the constant goal is to humiliate a foe. Humiliation is a central concept here, inflicting it on others, avoiding it oneself. And this really gets to what you can read about in the Donald, how Trump turned presidential politics into pro wrestling, about what Roland Barthes said about how heels work and how pro wrestling works and how the heel needs to get a grandiloquent kick and how that's the comeuppance is what you need from the heel. So then Fallows goes on to talk about how he finally saw the Battle of the Billionaires clip. You wouldn't need Jane Goodall or Sigmund Freud to see in this spectacle every ritual of dominance, emasculation, ridicule, and humiliation, even with all allowances made for the phony melodrama on which pro wrestling is built. Once I had seen the video, it replayed in my mind every time Trump stepped onto a debate stage. So James Fallows, get him a copy of the book. He's kind of a smart guy, so you know maybe he'd appreciate it too.
So fucking send him an email. God damn it. All right, so predictions for the debate. Who's going to win the championship? Who's going to win the debate?
So Clinton will win it, and then on Tuesday we'll find out that Trump won it.
And KO's totally going over. It's a dusty finish.